kind of the same human rights violations that Israel has been doing for years are now starting to seep into their own world.
Can you talk, Meirav, about this possible trade-off that's being reported? Israel, U.S. wanting Israel not to attack Iran again, but they can invade Rafah.
I think all of this is largely theater and largely performative. I mean, basically, Israel has been dangling the threat of an invasion in Rafah for months now. It doesn't mean that I don't think it's something that it plans to do, but the U.S. pushback on it, while firm rhetorically, hasn't really been convincing. I'm not convinced that the U.S. is actually about to withhold aid, or that the U.S. or Biden were actually going to stop Israel from invading Rafah, because they largely support the war effort. And Israel is almost surely going to respond to the Iranian strike in some way, and it's understandable. You know, if we understand the ways Israel works, that it would do so. I think it's also understandable that Israel, you know, would now, since it hasn't already responded, it's now going to consider its options in how it can do that and how it can leverage that situation. So now, in effect, it has the benefit of being able to kind of dangle both threats. We're both going to attack Iran and we're going to attack Rafah. And so ultimately, those things are still the case.
We have to leave it there. Meirav Zonshine, senior Israel analyst for the International Crisis Group. We'll link to your piece in Foreign Policy. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon lawmakers voted for hundreds of millions of dollars in housing for communities big and small statewide. What comes next? An Oregon school district grapples with hundreds of layoffs expected next month. And this tax season, the IRS had some new tools aiming at lessening taxpayers' pain. How did they work? Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I am Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. The next steps are coming after Oregon lawmakers made what they called groundbreaking housing investments. The housing package passed in Salem aims to create more housing in Oregon cities of all sizes, and it has hundreds of millions of dollars to fuel the effort. Eric Tegedoff talks to the executive director of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon.
Oregon lawmakers passed a major housing package in this year's session, but say easing the state's housing crisis will take more work. Bills passed during the short legislative session will send a total of $376 million to address the state's housing shortage. That includes Senate Bill 1530 and Senate Bill 1537, priorities for Governor Tina Kotek. Head of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon, Shannon Villhauer, says the governor's housing package is groundbreaking.
We also see important investments in emergency housing assistance, addiction recovery support, and renters protection. So those are all investments that are going to help stabilize Oregonians in need of housing assistance and benefit the communities we all share.
The housing package includes funds for housing and homelessness projects and to support counties buying land and development properties. However, Vilhauer says there's still more to do to address the crisis. During the next legislative session, she hopes the state will help first-time homebuyers, as well as make other investments.
Preserving affordable rental homes that exist now but are at risk of terming out of their affordability and going market rate. We'd love to see that affordable housing preservation investment move forward in a strong way.
Vilhauer says the housing issue in Oregon can't be solved immediately. It's a problem that's been decades in the making.
It will take a concerted effort over time to continue to make headway, which we're starting to get there, but we need to keep going with a sustained effort.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
This week, Salem-Keizer school district leaders blamed a lack of state funding for a budget deficit that they say is the reason for about 400 layoffs expected next month. Here's part of what Superintendent Andrea Castaneda's told the school board.
I do have just one addition to the very common question, how did we get here? The one addition I want to make is that there is a very real reason that across Oregon we're seeing multiple school districts suddenly moving in this direction. And when I want to emphasize suddenly, two things have happened at the same time. And the fact that they happened at the same time created a disruption in factors that previously were very predictable. The first thing that happened is that there was a pretty grave miscalculation in the cost of personnel increases in this biennium. No one in this room did that. It was so far off that even for Salem-Keizer, if that had been correct by itself, we would be able to avoid most of this reduction in force. No one in this room did that. And no one in this room could have predicted the way that things played out in this biennium. Those are new factors, not just to Salem-Keizer, but to all of the districts in Oregon. Portland is predicting a $70 million RIF next year. I'm sorry, $7 million reduction next year. And that's only year two of 3 years of reduction. So that is one really important feature that I just want to bring into the room. And then a second one is that the pandemic, we heard it from public speakers, technically, scientifically, it ended. Socially, emotionally, medically, culturally, economically, it did not. It's still playing out every day, and we're learning what people need. No factor could have predicted that. And no factor is accurately predicting the complexity of need. So I offer those only to provide an additional context about the moment that we're in and the ways that we got here.
And that was Andrea Castaneda's, the superintendent of the Salem-Keizer School District, which is the second largest school district in the state after Portland. The Salem-Keizer School Board voted unanimously in favor of the layoffs, which they say are necessary to keep the school system financially solvent, despite an outcry from teachers and parents. The tax filing deadline came this week, and with it, some thoughts from Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, who talked to members of the U.S. Senate Finance Committee about new IRS programs he says are making some things easier for taxpayers.
Anyone who denies that the direct file pilot was a huge success, my guess is just living in another universe. It was open to a fairly small percentage of taxpayers, but the reviews it got from its initial users were overwhelmingly positive. It seems like a whole lot of people were very stunned that a federal agency, particularly one as frequently vilified as the IRS, was able to build a helpful website that works. The tens of thousands of taxpayers who used Direct File this year collectively saved millions on fees that they would have paid to one of the tax software giants. The website was user-friendly. It was quick and easy to use. It didn't hassle users with upcharges for add-on services they didn't need. Direct File showed that the IRS could build a good tool that people like because it saves Americans time and money. No surprise, then, that the people who oppose it are absolutely furious and, once again, are doing everything they can to stop it from growing. The detractors said it didn't attract enough users, but tens of thousands of new users came in over the last week. The IRS hit its goal of 100,000 taxpayers using the system. There is no doubt in my mind that this will be more popular every year. Others have said that the cost estimates were too vague, but the fact is there's always challenges with pilot programs. Now that the IRS has tested this system and set a baseline, the costs are going to be clear going forward. Finally, there are some who said the whole project was unnecessary. They've said that taxpayers have the option of using free file systems through the big tax prep companies. They may have had a valid argument years ago, because before the tax prep giants got caught hiding free file options from eligible taxpayers, they were conning people into forking over hundreds of dollars they didn't need to spend. Congress simply cannot go around trusting the big tax prep companies to do the right thing. For some of them, their version of free file is the freedom for Americans to pay them even more. Bottom line, direct file is long overdue, and it's the kind of public service the federal government ought to be providing to Americans whenever it can. I understand the IRS and Treasury Department are now evaluating how the pilot program went over the last few months. Personally, I believe that this program should be expanded. I'm looking forward to the day when Oregonians come up to me in one of our 51 Fred Meyer grocery stores. I have been to every single one of them, having had a chicken in each one, to tell me how thrilled they were to save time and money with direct file. On the topic of vastly improved federal programs, I'll turn now to the IRS's continued success in improving customer service during the filing season. The IRS answered a million more calls with live assistance than it did during last year's filing season. It got call waiting times down to 3 minutes. It saved taxpayers 1.4 million hours of time than in previous years they would have spent basically listening to all the music and just being on hold. It smashed its goals for in-person service. Despite this success, apparently there have been some complaints from the other side of the aisle that the administration is asking for money to sustain this progress. I'm not sure what's behind that. Maybe they want to go back to the bad old days when taxpayers sat on hold for hours and couldn't get timely refunds. Doesn't make any sense to me. For the second filing season in a row, the IRS is proving that it can provide a top-notch level of taxpayer service when Congress gives it the resources. The IRS has announced some major enforcement efforts in the last few months. This includes cracking down on 125,000 cases where wealthy individuals, many of them people who bring in more than $1 million a year, never even filed a tax return. Let me repeat this. This is not people who figure out how to game the system. They are sufficiently contemptuous of the rules that they never even filed a tax return. There's also a new effort to root out the abuse of tax breaks for corporate jets, high-flying executives who take tax write-offs for personal travel, for example. And in my view, the IRS ought to look at similar abuses with corporate-owned yachts. When it comes to yachts, the abuses seem to me to be even more blatant. Yachts produce big write-offs, but I find it hard to believe that anybody is yachting to a board meeting. If Congress continues to cut the IRS's funding, or if the Inflation Reduction Act funding expires and Congress doesn't add more, we know exactly what will happen. Wealthy tax cheats will have an easier time getting away with breaking the law.
And that was Oregon Democratic U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. Also speaking was Idaho Senator Republican Mike Crapo with a decidedly different view.
The IRS needs to be accountable for the choices it makes, become more efficient, rigorously plan, provide full transparency and timely solicit real feedback from informed stakeholders like Congress before acting. Despite claims that the $80 billion in new funding would transform the IRS into a 21st century agency, the president's budget request indicates otherwise. While modest progress has been made, there are other areas where the agency continues to miss the mark. For example, last year, I raised concerns with the IRS strategic operating plan, including its vagueness and missing line item cost projections. We are still missing important details. Yet this year's budget asks for even more unprecedented IRS funding, more than $104 billion. This underscores that the initial windfall was not a cure. The IRS has not transformed, and the president believes the only way that that vision can be achieved is to spend more. While I support a transformed IRS, this approach is not the solution. For $80 billion, one would expect the transformational customer service changes and fully modern front-end and back-end IT. Instead, it seems that taxpayers have paid for mail to actually be opened and a decline in the phone wait times. Meanwhile, several million items of taxpayer correspondence remain unanswered, and 500,000 ID theft cases remain unresolved, on average, years later. IT modernization funding is also scheduled to run out years before the IRS finishes updating its systems. I assume that this is due in part to the bulk of the IRA funding being directed to enforcement. I don't disagree with the enforcement needs that my colleague, the chairman, has identified. An emblematic example of the just spend more, no questions asked approach, though, is the direct file program. Despite there already being multiple free filing programs offered by the IRS, the agency embarked on a redundant government-run tax preparation project complete with all attendant inefficiencies and conflicts of interest. The Government Accountability Office reported a highlight of many ways the supposed pilot program has not followed best practices, including key planning, budgeting, and accountability failures.
That was Republican Idaho U.S. Senator Mike Crapo. And also speaking to the Finance Committee was IRS Commissioner Daniel Werfel.
The 2024 tax season opened on schedule on January 29th, and we've seen a historic filing season unfold since then. Through April 6th, the IRS received more than 101.8 million individual income tax returns and issued nearly 66.8 million refunds for more than $201.1 billion. The Inflation Reduction Act funding has enabled the IRS to have one of its best filing seasons ever in terms of customer service. Taxpayers are seeing a difference. We've answered over 1 million more taxpayer calls than we did a year ago, and 3 million more calls than we did in 2022. Wait times and level of service on our main phone lines have improved. We've dramatically expanded service in our walk-in sites, increasing hours and serving more taxpayers, and new and expanded tools on IRS.gov are seeing heavy use. We had several ambitious transformation goals at the start of filing season, and IRS employees worked hard to deliver. Here are some examples through early April. We committed to an 85% level of phone service on our main taxpayer helpline during the filing season. As of early April, we've exceeded that goal at 88%. That's a huge improvement from 2022, when only 15% of callers could connect and receive support from a live assister. We committed to an average call wait time of 5 minutes or less on the agency's main taxpayer helpline. We exceeded that goal, with our mainline phones being answered in about 3 minutes. These are some of the examples of how we're seeing historic improvements in taxpayer service, and the agency is rebounding from some very tough and lean years during the past decade. At the same time, the Inflation Reduction Act funding has enabled us to begin making critical inroads in addressing tax evasion amongst the most complex and largest filers. This is a sharp turnaround from the past decade, when we were hindered by a lack of resources. Our compliance work includes focusing on tax delinquency and non-filing among high-income individuals, areas we are particularly concerned about. We are also responsibly leveraging artificial intelligence and hiring subject matter experts to find tax evasion amongst the largest and most complex partnerships and corporations. I want to be clear. Despite the improvements this tax season, the IRS has still much more work to do on many fronts. This includes closing remaining gaps on phone service, expanding digital options for all taxpayers, further strengthening data security, and supporting vulnerable populations by protecting them from scams and increasing access to the Earned Income Tax Credit.
And that was IRS Commissioner Daniel Werfel with Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden and Idaho U.S. Senator Mike Crapo, some of the voices at a hearing reviewing the tax season on Capitol Hill this week. In Washington state, workers will not be punished for skipping captive audience meetings. That's because the state has passed a law that prohibits repercussions for workers if they do not attend meetings called by their employers on political or religious issues.
Washington joins a handful of states that have done away with mandatory meetings for employees on political or religious matters. Sometimes known as captive audience meetings, the gatherings were seen as a way for employers to give their opinions on subjects like unionization and held potential consequences for employees who didn't attend. Lawmakers passed a bill this session allowing workers to skip the meetings without repercussions. Bill sponsor Senator Karen Kaiser, a Democrat from Des Moines, says we live in a divided society where emotions run high on political topics.
This bill simply protects employees to have a real choice on whether or not to attend a meeting called by their boss to be told about some political or religious issue.
Kaiser says the bill is nonpartisan. For instance, she says employers couldn't force employees to attend anti-union meetings, but employers also couldn't force them to attend a meeting about the importance of reproductive rights. The bill takes effect June 6th. Kaiser says the bill likely got across the finish line this session because of the uptick in union organizing and support for labor. She says there are widely known stories of Starbucks managers, for example, requiring employees to attend anti-union meetings while the employees organize the workplace.
Employees have been forced to attend meetings to listen to their boss or the employer basically tell them why they shouldn't join a union.
Washington is the sixth state to pass a law prohibiting attendance at captive audience meetings. Connecticut, Maine, Minnesota, and New York have passed similar laws in recent years. Oregon passed a law allowing workers to skip these meetings without repercussions in 2010. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, clear skies down to an overnight low of 38. Tomorrow's weather, sunny and up to 71. Today in history, on this date in 1906, the great San Francisco earthquake toppled buildings, killing thousands of people. Our quote of the day is from Charles Kuralt. It takes an earthquake to remind us that we walk on the crust of an unfinished planet. The U.S. Senate dismisses the Mayorkas impeachment effort. Maryland lawmakers fail to increase voting access. Texas Democrats call for better black maternal health. And polling confirms strong support for access to reproductive care, including abortion. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2024 Talks.
I will not assist Senator Schumer in setting our Constitution ablaze and bulldozing 200 years of precedent.
Missouri Republican Eric Schmidt objects to the Senate ending the impeachment of Homeland Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Schmidt says no majority leader before Chuck Schumer moved to dismiss impeachment charges without a trial when the official is still in office. Schumer says impeachment should not be used to settle immigration policy. Speaker Mike Johnson confirmed Wednesday he'll bring foreign aid legislation to the floor, despite pressure from Republican hardliners over assistance to Ukraine. The House could vote on the four bills by the weekend, with a total price tag of about $100 billion, including $9 billion in humanitarian aid for Gaza. Unable to be at a previous similar hearing, Columbia University's president yesterday told a House panel some expressions of anti-Semitism are against campus rules. Nemat Shafik said one visiting professor and 15 students had been disciplined, angering supporters of free speech. Polling by the Kaiser Family Foundation finds nearly 70% of OBGYN say overturning Roe has worsened their care for pregnancy-related emergencies. And Heidi Seek, co-founder of Vote Pro Choice, says access to reproductive care continues to motivate voters across the spectrum.
80% of our country does not want their elected officials making decisions about their pregnancies, about their reproductive freedom. Men, women, non-binary people, Republicans, independents, declined to stay, Democrats, across the board, this is true.
Texas has one of the highest rates of maternal mortality, especially among what is the nation's largest black population. Shea Wyrick Cathy with the Texas Democratic Party says that makes the political fight over reproductive care a life or death issue there.
This November, the stakes could not be higher.
The Maryland Senate is blocking automatic voter registration for newly released prisoners, even though legislation doing that had strong backing in the House. Joanne Antoine is the executive director of Common Cause Maryland.
Eligible voters are being released from correctional facilities throughout the state on a daily basis, and most of them are unaware that their right to vote has been restored. The Senate failed those voters, most of whom are Black.
U.S. senators are responsible for enforcing their own ethics rules, but since 2007, 1,500 complaints have resulted in no disciplinary action. Eric Cashton with the Campaign Legal Center says the Senate needs an independent ethics committee like that in the House.
We can no longer rely on self-policing in the Senate.
I'm Farah Siddiqui.
An alarm is raised by the reconciliation omission in Trudeau's budget speech. Menominee and Spirit Lake tribes sue social media giants over the suicide rates. And the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues kicks off at the New York headquarters. Here's Antonia Gonzalez with today's edition of National Native News.
In Canada, the government of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has unveiled its budget for the year with nearly $53 billion in new federal spending. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, First Nations leaders say the omission of reconciliation in the budget speech was alarming.
After criticizing this year's budget, many First Nations leaders are looking for a renewed commitment from the Trudeau government. They say Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland failed to talk about reconciliation in her budget speech. Among those who are looking for more is Newfoundland Regional Chief Brendan Mitchell. He was expecting to see what he calls a reconciliation budget.
We're not seeing a lot of positive change. And the change we need with respect to housing and infrastructure in this country on behalf of Indigenous people and communities requires a faster pace of action.
Also disappointed, Grand Chief Kathy Merrick of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs.
And yesterday, Canadians heard how the federal government plans to spend resources for the coming months and years. Yet this process is marred by a glaring omission. And I was there yesterday to be able to hear, and I did not hear any words pertaining to reconciliation, unfortunately.
But others were less critical. The Métis National Council praised the financial blueprint, calling it a step in the right direction. And there was new cash for Indigenous peoples, $9 billion, to cover major issues such as child and family services, education, health, housing, and on-reserve income assistance. And ministers in charge of Indigenous affairs say reconciliation has not dropped in priority, calling $9 billion a big investment. But in the 2021 budget, $18 billion were earmarked for Indigenous communities. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A Wisconsin tribe is one of the first tribal nations to sue social media companies. As Danielle Kading reports, it's one of two tribes accusing companies of contributing to higher suicide rates among Native American youth in a recent lawsuit.
The Menominee Indian Tribe and Spirit Lake Tribe in North Dakota filed the suit against companies that own Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. They're demanding companies take responsibility for dangerous features that lead to compulsive social media use. Mary Owen is director of the Center of American Indian and Minority Health in Duluth. Owen says anything that's harmful to teens will be felt even more by Native American youth.
These social platforms, media platforms, are harmful to everyone in that they're not about community. They're about an individual. But they're even that much more harmful to a vulnerable population like Native people.
The lawsuit notes American Indians in Wisconsin were hospitalized for self-harm at more than double the rate of white residents in 2022. A Google spokesperson says the tribe's claims simply aren't true. Researchers say media effects vary widely among individuals, posing both positive and negative outcomes. While there's evidence of harmful practices by companies, they say a direct link between social media use and suicidal ideation is lacking. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
The United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues began this week in New York. The session is covering a number of issues, including the environment, culture, education, health, and human rights. Leaders are also focusing on the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The theme of the session includes a focus on Indigenous youth voices to highlight their role and values in Indigenous communities. A 10-year milestone is being marked this year, the adoption of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples. It will be commemorated Thursday with an event hosted by the President of the UN General Assembly. The UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues runs through April 26th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
This week's Point Puzzle has us thinking about fractions. For more, we go to Pearl Star from KPOV Bend with the Point Puzzle. a weekly radio puzzle challenging listeners with words and logic.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked for a word that is a type of bird, but is also a sound made by another bird. Well, the answer is crow, which can be a sound made by a rooster. Our winner this week is Gretchen Everson, who listens to KPOV in Bend, Oregon.
It's a crow.
For the new puzzle, tell me when a half is a quarter. I'm looking for two answers that are both physical things, not nothing or the null set. So again, send me two answers where a half is a quarter. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Divided by 0, 0, 2, divided by 0, 0, 0.
Let's not go home, we'll catch the late train. I've got enough money to pay on the way. When the postman calls, he'll deliver the letter. I've explained everything.
This has been Pearl Stark with your point puzzle for the week of April 15th. The point puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Eric Tegedoff and Farah Siddiqui, the producers Annette Newell, and our engineers Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening.